Good evening, everybody, and hail. Welcome to another episode of The Bog right here on Dave Martell channel, which you should like, subscribe, share, click the little alert button so you can alert every time we go live here on The Bog, which is every single Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern, our brand new slot, or whenever I go live doing live streams elsewhere or do my uploads or anything. We got all kinds of awesome stuff coming your guys' way here on Dave Martell channel. We got a really awesome episode tonight. This is the Halloween special of The Bog. We're going to talk about cryptids and paranormal and all kinds of other spooky, grotesque, bizarre things that are found within the Germanic lore and tradition. It's going to be a really cool episode. I know everybody tuned into my old stuff, really liked the conspiracy stuff I used to do. Well, we're giving you a little taste of it as we expand and get into more expansive topics and all kinds of other stuff. And it's going to be a really great show tonight. You guys are really, really like it. We're going to talk about some really cool stuff, everything from trolls to draugrs to sea monsters to all kinds of stuff. But before we get started, I'll give a shout out, like always, to my home girl, Miss Hannah, a traditional apothecary, traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. I don't know how many times I got to say it. Stop giving the vampires your money. Support folk economy. Everybody remembers the Gillette commercial that came out pretty recently talking about how much they hate white guys and like all this stuff, demonizing us. You know, look at how they depict us. They hate you, man. They hate your guts. Stop giving them your money. They do not have a monopoly. There's people out there that love you, that are part of our folk, that make wonderful, wonderful products such as this. Traditional Apothecary, it's made out of all homegrown, you know, organic stuff from our homelands here in the United States, Europe, all over the place, European homelands. You know, it's great shampoo, beard oil. You know, lotion. My mom loves the lotion. It's great, great, great stuff. I use it. My wife uses it. My mom uses it. Dr. G uses it. Dr. G's a doctor, real life doctor. So it's doctor approved. So keep your white bright, keep your beard robust, and keep your mane flowing just like Big Dave. Go to traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Promo code Dave to get 10% off. So, Mr. Tristan Powers from Ari Akasha is back. My new co-host. How we doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing very well, Dave. Glad to be on.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And let me know in the chat if my sound is better this time. We were having some sound issues last week, which I apologize. I think I have them worked out. So let me know if the levels are wrong or anything like that. It looks good on my end. So just let me know right away so I can fix them. So let's get started, Mr. Tristan. We got a whole bunch of stuff we got to cover before the hour's up. So tonight is our Halloween episode, and we're going to get into cryptids as well as paranormal. We're also going to give some personal experiences about stuff, but let's get started. You wanted to talk about some of the things that are found within the lore, more specifically the sagas, correct? Which is the Lindworm, correct? Or the Grimnismal?
No, today you were right. The Lindworm is what we're going to be starting with here. Though it is found within the Grimnismal with an attestation by Odin himself. So definitely accurate. This thing exists, guys. You got to keep that in mind. It is real, religious artifact here.
So, give us a rundown of what the Lindworm is, because I know the Lindworm. You know, what is the, you know, it's supposed to be just like a great serpent, correct?
Yes, a Lindworm is a dragon-like creature. It's a wingless serpent with a dragon head, with a reptilian scaled skin and two clawed arms. It's commonly seen in heraldic devices, where it's kind of like one of those dragons without...
Yeah, that's...
I'm sorry. It's one of those dragons without the four legs. It says the two stands up on two legs and has two arms, but doesn't walk on four legs.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. And I know there's... When I did a show with Mr. Rory called The Conduit, we did a whole episode about sea monsters and you know, serpentine creatures and stuff like that. So serpentine reptilian monsters are found all throughout the lore, all throughout the world, really. You know, one could really think that maybe at some point there were creatures like this that swam in our oceans or lived in our forests and all that kind of stuff. What do you think the rationale is behind that? Do you think that these are real creatures like the one found in Grimnismal, like the Lindworm, or do you think it could be maybe like a spirit of some type?
Well, I think it is definitely a real creature in the sense that it exists somewhere. Whether or not it exists, in nature is a different thing. Probably not. We would think you would see the Lindworm walking around at some point today. Though it may have existed in various areas many years ago, 1,000 years ago, back when our ancestors were roaming around. I would say that it certainly exists because it has a religious attestation, though it seems mostly that they exist within Niflhel at this point.
And here in the notes it says that Lindworm, using the word Ormur, meaning snake or serpent, it mentions Nithog. Is this like Nithog, like related to this kind of thing, or?
Right, Nithogger is a type of Lindworm, so they are the same
Oh,
creature. He's
wow.
just a very old, very prominent version.
Wow, that's it. I know. Here in the notes, you got Ofnir and Svafnir. These are things that are mentioned in the Eddas, so
Yes,
it's
in
really
Grimnismal
incredible.
Hall.
Yeah, that's incredible. So, what do you think is the I guess the chances that something like a lindworm is out there slithering around today, and we could run into it if we're out like maybe in a boat or in the forest, or what do you think that is there any like megafauna of this variety existing today in the material world? Or do you think that this is kind of like maybe an extinct creature? What do you think?
I think it's possible that you could run into this, though it is very unlikely. Such an incidence would have to be a spiritual experience, like visiting a god or an ancestor or something, except obviously you don't want to visit the Lindworm.
So you believe essentially that the Lindworm and other like monsters of this type are essentially like a spiritual like a spirit or like a maybe like a like some sort of otherworldly being.
I think it's very possible that creatures like these exist between worlds, that they have some sort of ability to pass between where they would hope where they would live, probably in this case Niflhel, but at some point they would come into Midgard, perhaps when they escape from wherever it is they're supposed to be locked up. Obviously, some of the gods might take issue with that, such as Great Thor.
So, you just mentioned like Niflhel. There are stories about Niflhel where you get like eaten by snakes and stuff like that. And I know Snorri talks about like, the Great Devourer, the Corpse Devourer, or something like that. Is this a
Yes,
similar
that is
creature?
exactly this. They're talking about the Lindworms, the serpents underneath that devour those people who lived lives of Neith.
Which to people that are watching and that aren't familiar with this term, Neith. Is a word that literally means, I guess you could say sin. Somebody that lives a life like a bad life. If you're a scumbag or a thief or
Right.
a junkie or.
Sin is a very good translation. Someone who is unvirtuous, who goes against the laws of the gods.
So if you are a nit thing, somebody that is a sinful criminal or something like that, you would go to this plane Niflhel and experience these great serpents that, chew off your parts and
Yes, Grimnismal tells us that Thor and other gods would judge you when you die, and if found to be wanting, they would send you down into a great pool of water, sort of like a stream or a cavern, where the water teems with Lindworms who would eat your soul.
Wow. And that actually corresponds with quite a few other mythologies. I wouldn't even say mythologies, like eschatologies from around the world. Like, what do the Egyptians believe that when you go for judgment, they weigh your soul against a feather or whatever, and like
Yes.
a great reptile comes up and devours you if you're no good.
Yes, I believe they have crocodiles for that purpose, but it's also coterminous with their god Ra fights continuously against the great serpent Apep. And you can see there that again, the serpent is relegated to a position as an enemy of the god, something that wants to devour life.
Yeah. So, what do you think about like some of the old, I guess you could say, I don't know if you would call them Levantine or something like that. Like Babylon and like all these that had like serpent priests. What do you think about them as opposed to our tradition where we kind of view serpents as bad guys?
Right. There was a lot of Indo-European influence upon the Mesopotamian peoples, especially the Babylonians. They had a lot of Hittite influence and whatnot, especially later on during their histories where this comes up. They even have a thunder striker who fights a great serpent, so wonder where they got that from. Though it's hard to say what the purpose of a spirit is in a different culture like that. It could be something good, it could be something bad. It's very difficult to say because, of course, these aren't Indo-Europeans. They don't have the same religious tradition as we do. But even within our culture, we have attestations for snakes or serpents that are in a very positive role. For instance, some translations of the Rigstula have Jarl be born with eyes as grim as a snake. It signifies intelligence.
So you don't think that Babylon or Sumeria, whatever you want to call it, and there's a third civilization that was in that region that I can't think of it this right now, but you don't think that those guys had Indo-European origins?
No, I definitely don't. It's sort of up in the air for the Babylonians, but I generally take the position that they are descended from European agrarian farmers, the Near Eastern agrarian people. Those would be the same people that inhabited Europe before the Indo-Aryans came and conquered them.
So they are, you would say that they are related to Neolithic farmers.
Yes.
That's fascinating. And there are a lot of people believe that both people of the bat. I know we're kind of getting off track here, but it's always fun to talk about the Indo-Europeans and origins of our civilization and our folk. A lot of people now believe that, well, we know scientifically that both the Basque people that are in the region of like Spain and France, and also the people that inhabit now Sardinia, are probably genetically the closest to the Neolithic farmers. Would you say that those people that inhabit those regions are probably genetically closest to the original inhabitants of Babylon?
Oh, absolutely. Though it's worth mentioning that the European farmers have different gene flows into them as well, whereas the Babylonians are mostly a different blend of the agrarian and the native hunter-gatherers. The agrarian ones in Europe are also a blend of native European hunter-gatherers and also North African agrarian and hunter-gatherers and also the steppe folk, which is, of course, our ancestors primarily.
And would you say that last week we were talking with our buddy Kerwin, who's also from Arya Kasha, and he was speaking about the Yamnaya pit grave culture and stuff like that. Would you say that our ancestors from the steppe predate Babylon?
They definitely do as a formation of a cultural identity, because we know that the Rig Veda is something like 2500 BC was when it was originally written constructed. And we know, because we can share across the mythologies from across the Indo-European peoples, that we had to have been a single people much further back than that.
Mm-hmm.
Which would definitely put us, I mean, the Rig Veda itself puts itself at a coterminity with Babylon. So if we existed much further back than that, we definitely had to have existed as a single people before Babylon was ever even a city.
And I know that's Sumeria or Sumer or whatever, and like the city of Ur, I believe it's called, was supposedly their first city. Would we have predated that as well?
I would believe so, yes.
That's fascinating. All right. So I know we kind of went on a tangent there, but it's, like I said, it's always fascinating to talk about our Indo-European roots and stuff like that. So let's move on to another kind of creepy entity from our Germanic past that our ancestors were very much terrified of and could very much exist today in some form or another, and that is the Draugr. The Draugr is essentially an undead entity. Now, the undead entity is kind of found in several different texts and is actually described kind of different in several different texts. Some texts describe it as essentially like a zombie or like I guess like some sort of undead shambling physical monster. But it's also depicted as some sort of like malevolent spirit from what I've
read. Right. You got to understand, the Draugr doesn't divide neatly between a ghost and a zombie. To our ancestors, it was both what we would consider a ghost and a zombie, and one being some sort of a phantom or a revenant, like a possessed corpse.
Wow. And where does the Draugr come from? That it can this is just the corrupted spirit of a man that's always been in that fleshly form, or did this entity come from another world, do you think?
No, generally the Draugr is a man who has recently passed away and has been they've either been cruel and wanted to come back and cause some sort of harm, or they've had some sort of grievance with everyone around them. They weren't properly laid to rest or something of that sort. And so they come back and possess their corpse as a Draugr and wreak havoc.
Yeah. Corey asks, he says, asks if we're talking about Optergonger.
Yes, the Draugr is also called the Optergonger. It's literally the Again Walker.
Yeah, that's literally what it means, Again Walker. And you said you actually have some pretty cool notes here about, speaking of Indo-European, the word Draugr can be traced to a Proto-Indo-European stem, Drovgos, or phantom.
Yeah, Drogos from a phantom. There you can see that the concept of the Draugr is actually extremely ancient. It goes all the way back to our Proto-Indo-European roots. Almost is the exact same word.
Wow. Wow. It
comes also from the root drug, which means to deceive.
That's incredible. And I know in many of the stories that these Draugrs, and you know, this kind of concept is going to transcend just the Germanic tradition. It's going to be found all over the place, folk tales.
Right. It's cognate to the Hindu boot, literally a ghost.
Wow. And yeah, that's incredible that it's actually also found in Indo-European traditions in the East. But the thing is with the Draugr, what the Draugr sort of is like, I guess you could say, like the kind of similar story of what like a poltergeist might be, a human that is so obsessed with something material in life from like a very dark standpoint, somebody that's obsessed with greed and money, somebody that is very lustful and obsessed with a woman or obsessed with a house or something like that. And it corrupts them and they die and they eventually become attached to those things. Am I correct there?
Right. That is exactly how a Draugr appears to work. They appear to be some sort of corrupted being. Like, as you said, they have some sort of material tie that won't let them move on, or they choose not to move on in any case. Though there are instances of very virtuous, admirable people who have just died and become Draugr for some unspecified reason, perhaps because of a curse, or maybe they were killed by a Draugr themselves that might bring someone back as a Draugr as well, against their will.
Yeah, that's incredible. So, guys, don't be an anus worshiper and a materialist, or you might come back as a Draugr, some shambling monstrosity that lingers on the earth and doesn't pass over to the next world. I mean, that's but you know what? That story's all throughout all kinds of stories. The idea of if you become obsessed with the material, you will become an abomination. You know what I mean? Not that you're not an abomination already. And this kind of also pushes forward the idea of having transcendent thought. You know what I mean? You got to make sure you have transcendent thought and ascend beyond the idea of obsession with the material, so you don't become an abomination. And that's just taking this as if it's some sort of spiritual teaching or metaphor, and not assuming that it's a entity that's all over the place. But if it is actually an entity, there's plenty of stories of this as well. And we get into, I got a friend on Facebook, and he's got a YouTube channel called Yaakov Alive or something like that. And he has a show called The Skinwalker Tapes, and that's really, really fascinating. It's like a really cool throwback conspiracy thing that guy does over. He's really funny too. But he gets into talking about like skinwalkers and wendigos and like some of these kind of creatures. Would like a skinwalker or a wendigo be something similar to a Draugr?
It is conceptually similar, though they do appear in the Indian tradition, Native American in this case, that like a wendigo is someone who comes about from eating human flesh, a cannibal in any case. That doesn't appear to be how a Draugr is formed, but it is very similar in that they terrorize the living people and they're malevolent entities.
So there's also stories of the Draugr can possess people. Am I correct there? Or
after a manner of speaking, they seem to mostly possess corpses who are recently dead, and they are possessed by the spirit of the Draugr to wreak havoc. And actually, there seems to be a main Draugr, and they'll have a band of followers that they've somehow cursed and brought into their situation here.
Yeah, you have some pretty cool quotes here from some stories. Let me see here. You got I'm not sure which one's this from, but it's called the Urbirgja saga. It says the event took place in the autumn of Famr. That one day, neither the shepherd nor the sheep came home. In the morning, a search was made, and the shepherd was found dead not far from Thorofir's cairn. He was completely coal black, and every bone was broken. He was buried near Thorfir. Of all the sheep in the valley, some were found dead, and the rest had strayed into the mountains, were never found. Whenever birds landed on the grave, they fell down dead. And this is from an actual saga. And then it goes on, and then there's a bunch more here. I don't know if we have time to read all of this, but that's an incredible story. That coincides with a lot of other stories found elsewhere as well.
Right. Many instances we would today call a haunting or a ghost is something our ancestors would call the haunting of a Draugr.
Very cool. And we had a conversation pretty recently talking about like hauntings and stuff like that, because both me and you had paranormal experiences. We were actually sharing our paranormal experiences with each other, and we got into the discussion of whether or not these entities would be Draugr, or would they be whites, or would they be some sort of other kind of spirit or malevolent entity. And you made a really fascinating point, and you said that a lot of times, you know, those of you that aren't familiar with what a white is, a W-I-G-H-T, it's like a spirit of the land or a spirit of a house or something like that. You know, a lot of times these entities aren't always malevolent, but they can be perceived as such because they are an otherworldly entity. What they think is just, you know, interacting with us or doing something scares the crap out of us because they are otherworldly.
Right. Just because something of a spirit or a ghost of that sort looks malevolent to you, or even if it's very dangerous, doesn't mean that they believe themselves to be malevolent. Of course, they could be confused or scared even about what's transpired, and they don't understand what they're doing to you.
Yeah, that's incredible. Or they could absolutely be malevolent. You know what I mean? They could be malevolent, or they could just be angered. Like a white that is a spirit that is not necessarily bad or evil or, you know, chaotic or however you want to say it, entropic. You know, I mean, this entity could just be angered at you. Like, for example, you know, I mean, I'm sure people here in the chat have gotten into fights, especially the men. I'm sure you guys have gotten into fights with people. You're not a bad guy, but that you know, scumbag at the bar gave you some lips, so you punched him in his mouth. You know, I mean, you're not a bad guy, but you got pissed off, you punched him in the mouth. To him, you're like, you're a bad guy. You know what I mean? So, and we, as especially here in the Wolf Age, where we're so separated from the spiritual world and we're so separated from the metaphysical world, we don't understand, like, what toes we're stepping on and who we're offending. You know, if you're doing something in your house and this house has been inhabited by a spirit for, like, centuries, you're just some dork that's just, like, walking in the door acting like you own the place to them from their point of view. And Corey says, Landwhites, Landvater. Yeah, that means land father, fathers of the land. So yeah, that's kind of how I interpret it, that these entities that we deal with, and I know a lot of people in the chat have had paranormal experiences, and I just want to see how many people have. Press 9 in the chat if you've had a paranormal experience or an experience with ghost or some kind of spirit or something like that. Press 9 so I can see how many people have actually experienced this, because pretty much everybody that I know in real life can attest to at least something bizarre and paranormal.
Right. I mean, we'll be discussing ours a little later in the show.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And that's going to be the, I got quite a few stories, and I know I've YouTube, why did you hide this? Thank you, mods. Many thanks to my mods in the chat. So many wrenches that do such a good job here. But also, if you guys have a question, you can send us a super chat, and we'll absolutely read it for you and answer your question. Or if you just want to comment, stuff like that, you donate to the show if you like our work, you like what we're doing. You could just, you know, throw us a little gift, and it'll go to, you know, us putting in work and the time that we put in researching this stuff and helping me upgrade my studio and all that good stuff. But anyway, let's move on here. We wanted to talk about that. Now, here's one that we covered, like I said, on The Conduit. Talk about sea monsters. This is one that you want to... I can't pronounce these guys. So if you want to take this one away, I've actually never heard
right,
of
it. Right, I'll do this one. These are... We're going to be talking about two twin sea monsters who were discovered by the Norseman Orvarodr. And their names are Lyngbakkr and Hafgufa. Hafgufa. And these two twin sea monsters would lure sailors to land on them, posing as an island. They would sit up at the top of the ocean when boats were passing by, and they would present themselves as an island covered with heather, which is it's like a purplish plant that looks very appealing. People would try to land on them and, you know, collect resources or even just rest because, of course, sea travel was very difficult in those days. But when these people would get onto the land, of course, they would start searching around, and suddenly Lyngbakkr and Hafgufa would submerge beneath the water and drown everyone and presumably consume their corpses.
So these guys were just looking like islands, and when you land on them, they just drown you and then munch on you.
Right.
They would have to be pretty gargantuan creatures to appear as islands.
Oh, could you imagine how terrifying that would be? I mean, something that was so large that you mistake it as a geographical feature.
And how do you take this? Do you think that this is maybe just an embellished story? Is this something that you take seriously, or is this maybe an extinct creature? Or what are your thoughts on this?
You know, I think there are a couple different options here. Of course, it could just be referring to very large sea creatures. I mean, we have these even today, great blue whales and giant squids and stuff. These things exist. Of course, they exist in the water. And it wasn't even until very recently we discovered that giant squid were real. I mean, people previously believed that the Kraken was just a Germanic myth. But no, they do exist within the deep places and the trenches in the ocean. So I think these could be sized up versions of that, maybe, you know, filtered down through the storytelling. Of course, it could just be referring to really very big examples of their native species, something that, you know, doesn't come around today but might have been around, you know, once in 1,000 years. Some whale gets, you know, half again as big as it should have, and they mistaked it for a rock. Perhaps barnacles or something of that sort could cover them, and they might have mistaked it in the heat of the moment.
That's incredible. We have a quick super chat from our boy Corey. He gives us $20. He says, thanks for giving us so much information all the time. Our pleasure, Mr. Corey. Our pleasure.
Absolutely. Love to do it.
And thank you so much for the generous gift, my friend. Many blessings to you, sir. But guys, I love doing this. You know, Tristan as well. We dedicate our lives to spreading information and wisdom and knowledge and all this stuff. So it's a wonderful pleasure having you guys here in our hall to share these things. So many thanks again to Mr. Corey for his generous gift, and many thanks to you guys, and thank you for the gift of friendship, you guys. So we're halfway, so I want to kind of segue into our kind of personal stories here, Mr. Tristan. We have I have quite a few paranormal stories. If I get off telling these ghost stories, we're gonna be here all freaking night. So let's get started with you had an experience with what we call a Dunkelfar, right?
Right. Of course, I can't be entirely sure about what it is exactly, though I generally take the position that it was a Dunkelfar for reasons that will become clear in the telling.
Now, before you get started, explain to the audience what a Dunkelfar is.
Right. A Dunkelfar is literally a black elf, a dark elf. They traditionally exist within the subterranean realms. Normally, an elf would be a Ljósafár, is the elf of light. Their sun creatures exist within Alfheim under Freyr. But the Dokkafár exist beneath the earth, and some people, including myself, believe that they are coterminous with the dwarves, the Durgard. And they're found in the lore as the exact the opposite of a life elf, where the light elves are beautiful and generous and very much something that you would like to experience. A Dokkafár is the exact opposite, black as pitch or dark like the moon.
So we're not
And
talking
they're
about
generally
like,
described as very cruel.
so we're not exactly talking about like for the Forgotten Realms fans out there. We're not talking about Dritz Duorden here. We're talking about like a supernatural creature, right?
Right, we're very much. When you talk about the Alfar, you got to imagine that Tolkien mostly got it correct. The Alfar are very humanistic, personable entities. In some cases, they're often mistaken for gods, or they exist around them as servants and friends.
Incredible. So would the Alfar maybe be construed by like our Christian friends as angels?
In some ways, the Ljósafár would definitely be angelic as a sort of being, a bright sun deity almost.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
Of course, these are like nature deities in some sense. So they exist within our world as much as they do Alfheim or Asgard.
So, speaking of Lord of the Rings, would you say that the character in the story of in Lord of the Rings, Tom Bombadil, would he be an Alfar?
Tom Bombadil is very close to being an Alfar, yes, especially his mercurial nature, where you don't quite understand what he's doing, why he's there, or what he's saying, and he doesn't particularly care about you, because the Alfar are very removed from humanity. They don't often understand humans, and they can be unintentionally harmful to humans. Even the Ljósafár, who wouldn't intentionally hurt you, might unfortunately hurt you because they don't understand human limits. To them, they're immortal deities almost.
Our buddy Chad Martin in the chat asks, has anyone read The Coming Race by Edward Lytton? And we're going to do a whole episode on Inner Earth eventually, trust me. But yes, I have read The Coming Race, and we will do an episode talking about Inner Earth and Agartha and that kind of stuff. You better believe we will. So that's actually one of the topics that I'm like really interested in. And then also my buddy Sturm says, I believe that he's referencing the Dokkafár. He says, sounds like the shadow entities people report seeing.
Yes, that ties in very heavily to my story, actually.
Okay, let's hear about your story where you believe that you interacted with Dokkafár.
Right, so to set up the story here, I was alone watching a movie on TV, sitting inside of a reclining chair, one of the big comfortable ones that you can sit back in and everything. And the other side of the house is a straight shot from me, from where I was sitting in the living room area, and I had my computer set up there. But of course, I was in the living room watching TV, and a commercial comes on. So I just glance away because, of course, I'm not really interested in watching their advertisements and whatnot. And I see a pale woman, maybe very young, 16, 18, something of that sort. And she's staring at my computer screen, hunched over just a little bit. And as I'm watching her, I notice that she's clothed in effectively nothing, but she's not nude. She's almost like the darkness around, the shadows are wrapped around her like a cloak. Pale skin, long black hair, ethereally beautiful, more than I could possibly imagine or possibly explain to anyone here.
Wow.
And this being just is watching my computer, and I'm watching it for 15, 20, 30 seconds, and enough to snap me out of it. And I start thinking, wow, what am I really seeing here? And I look away and blink a couple times, rub my eyes, and look back to make sure. And the being is gone. It's turned into an electric orb almost. And as I'm watching it, it starts floating away past a window, like a barricade in the middle, holding up a support structure, out the other side of that, then out the door and down, never to be seen again.
Wow, that's an incredible story. Incredible story. So before we touch on that, I want to read a super chat from my good buddy Nick. He asked, so Dave, when are you going to try curry? as everybody knows here, I am not a fan of Indian food. In fact, I think that it is mediocre. And Nick, I have tried curry, and I am not impressed.
You know, amusingly enough, I've never eaten Indian food myself. When my a friend of mine recently got married, and I went cross country to go attend his wedding, and I tried to get
in. I think
our stream stopped.
We are back online here.
Okay, good. There we go.
Let me know in the chat if you guys hear me again. I'm very, very sorry. I got a big thunderstorm going through right now, so I better attribute it to that. So, let me know. Yeah,
absolutely. Unfortunate, but it happens.
Yeah. So my apologies there.
The vagaries of nature can't help that.
Yeah. So let's go back to your experience here. This is really, really fascinating and a really vivid kind of experience that you saw this entity, and then it kind of just turned into an orb of light and floated away. What was your reaction when you experienced this? Okay, first I got to ask, you know, we got to have the rational kind of look at this. Were you like drinking or, you know, token?
No, I was completely sober, just watching TV.
Not token on jazz cabbage or anything like that?
No, nothing of sort. I don't even smoke. So, couldn't have been anything like that. Totally sober. And it was actually so clear that I had a moment when I thought maybe it's just this strange woman that's come into the house and I hadn't noticed.
So did you feel fear, or did you, like, what was your reaction? What was your emotions when you saw this entity?
I didn't feel fear watching it immediately, but after it floated away in the orb and I had just left there with myself thinking about it, it definitely took me maybe 20 minutes before I had gotten out of the chair and looked around the house, looked outside, trying to find it again. But it was definitely something scary to think about, especially if you start mulling over that if it had been a Dokofar, that it might have been a malicious entity indeed.
That's pretty terrifying, actually. I know, I don't know if this counts as like a Dokofar, but I actually had an experience where I saw just like a black shadow entity before. And in fact, I saw it a few times, you know, my mom's old house that I grew up in was haunted. Like, it was confirmed haunted. Everybody that I grew up with that hung out with me confirmed that it was haunted. Even people that were very, very much skeptics, you know, it came across some really bizarre experiences. Well, when I got a little bit older, I moved into the basement because the basement had a fireplace, and, you know, I had a big giant room all by myself in the basement. Check one, check two, can you hear? So my apologies,
yeah,
Everybody. But if it's too bad on the live, I'll just delete it and I'll re-upload because this records the whole thing. But there's this entity that I used to come into contact with. I don't know if it was a Dokofar or if it was like an angry former human that lived in the lived in my house. So it was very much a masculine entity. It was this black shadow figure. It was absolutely terrifying. And the way, when I would see it, I would like, okay, so in my basement, there's no actual doors. I'm a teenager. I had like a blanket hanging that was nailed into the thing. It was like in my little basement bachelor pad. And, you know, once in a while, I would just like let it hang open and stuff, just let cool air come in and stuff like that. There's the one time specifically that I saw it, the most defined was I was sitting there and I'm hanging out. I was actually playing Xbox 360. I was playing Mass Effect. Believe it or not, I remember this. I was sitting there playing Mass Effect, and I look up and I see something like a shadow pass by, and freaked me out a little bit because, you know, it freaked me out a little bit. So I'm just gonna keep playing. Well, I look up again and I notice that this entity is standing in the doorway. You know, it's like just standing right there in the doorway, just completely black, like a shadow. I couldn't see through it. I couldn't see past it. And it was like human shaped, except it was very, very tall. It freaked me out so bad. I sat there and stared at it for like maybe like 5 seconds. And I was so freaked out, I dropped my Xbox controller and the batteries exploded out and everything. And I reached down and grabbed the Xbox controller to pick it up just out of instinct. I look up and it was just gone. So that was my experience with one of them.
Well, that does sound rather terrifying. Did it touch or physically interact with anything in your environment?
It did not. It did not. It just
so it didn't move the sheet or anything. It just appeared and disappeared.
It was there. It like walked past the door, stood in the doorway. I looked down, looked up. It was gone.
Could you see any of its features, or was it just the outline of like a man?
It was an outline of a man. I feel that it was a man. Because it was tall and it had like a masculine kind of shape. There's no like physical hands or anything. It was just like the outline, almost like it, like you know the character like the Bic guy on the lighters. He's just kind of like a silhouette with a head and like arms and stuff. That's what it looked like.
Well, that does sound rather terrifying. What exactly did you feel at the moment? What did you do afterwards?
I ran upstairs and turned on all the lights. And actually my friend Andrew was napping on the couch and I woke him up and I was like, yah, 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 yah. I told him everything. And he's like, he was all freaked out stuff too. So we just like kind of like sat in the living room and like we're just hanging out all freaked out till like, you know, 4 a.m. We even slept on the couches there in the living room because we were both so freaked out. Check one, check two. Mr. Tristan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
I'm sorry. It's like the chat finally loaded back up and stuff. I'm really sorry about the connection and everything, guys. But so, Mr. Tristan, what do you think? Do you think that this was the experience of a Dokkelfar, or do you think this was something different?
It does not really sound like much of a Dokkelfar, though it could be. We don't have that many attestations for us to reliably go to. Definitely a shadow entity of some sort. Maybe a Nyctenmara, the mayor of something of that sort.
Oh, the nightmare.
As we know, the nightmare, as I believe I've explained to you before.
Yeah.
Our ancestors believed that the nightmare was an actual physical spiritual being who could ride you almost in a possessed sort of manner, like a grotesque being who would influence your thoughts and your perceptions, something of that sort.
Oh man, do you want to segue into the story about the night hag, or do you want to follow up with something else?
Oh yes, let's do the night hag. That one was actually pretty scary.
Okay, so
I think people would enjoy that one.
All right, so I'm going to tell everybody. Since I was a little kid, I have been having nightmares about like this witch, this very specific like witch. And the furthest memory that I have was so I was probably about 7 or 8 years old. I was in elementary school, and in elementary school there used to be Monday Night Raw and Monday Night Nitro wrestling. And when I was a kid I was real big into wrestling. I used to love it. And
I was into wrestling for a few years myself. Yeah. I think most little boys were.
God, well, because it was awesome back then. Like Attitude Era, like all that. You had the NWO. Okay, well, we're not going to get into all that. But I used to watch one on the TV and then have the other one recording on my other TV with the VCR. I recorded on tape. And then when the one was over, I would go to the other TV and watch that afterwards as I was going to sleep. And with my VCR, and I had the little, you know, one of the big box TVs, like it was a smaller one, but that was what I had in my room when I was a kid. We used to have VCRs back then. And when the tape was over, when it would run out, it would, the screen would just turn blue. It was just like what the screen did when the tape was over. And a lot of times I would fall asleep watching Monday Night Nitro on the VHS. And the whole room sometimes would like light up blue, and I would like, you know, turn it off or whatever. And sometimes I would just like fall asleep to this like blue room with my TV or whatever. And the first memory that I had a dream of this witch, I've called her a witch my whole life, is I wake up, and this is my dream. I wake up in my dream, and I hear this like really like labored, creepy breathing, like this horrible, like coarse breathing. And I'm like, I can't move. I'm paralyzed. And I look over, and sitting like just like 2 feet away from me is this like hunched witch, like rotten lips, jacked up teeth, black eyes, just gnarled hair, wearing like this like burlap dress, like long clawed fingernails. She's filthy, dirty, like greasy, wet, and she's just staring at me, like breathing, just like look, it's the worst. It's giving me the, like, freaking me out now. And
And how old were you when you first saw this?
I guess I was 6 or 7 or 8. I was in elementary school.
And you know, it's funny you call it a witch, because that's not the traditional image of a witch, is it? Something that a 6-year-old would come up with in their mind.
Yeah, that's just what I called it, because I couldn't like think of like I didn't know what a hag was back then or anything. I just thought of this scary, monstrous looking lady, and I was like, this is a witch. This is a mean, you know, witch. And later on, I would see her in dreams. In fact, like still once in a while, I'll have at least like a couple times a year, I have a dream. Sometimes every other year, sometimes whatever. But I have this. The most recent one was this was a dream, a nightmare that I was having, and this is more indicative of what they're like now. Is I was laying on the bare floor of my mom's old, in my parents' old room in the old house that we grew up in, except there was no carpet. It was completely barren. It was like, you know, concrete floor, and like it looked weird. Like it did not look like my house, but it was. I knew it was my house, and I'm laying on the floor beside their old bed, and like obviously my parents aren't there. It's just nobody's in the room, and I could hear like slow, like dragging footsteps coming down the hallway back to my parents' room. And man, this is terrible. And I remember, like, I couldn't yell, I couldn't move, I couldn't breathe anything. I'm just like paralyzed. All I could do is look around, and I look into the doorway, and she comes into the doorway, and she like very, oh man, it's creepy. She comes over, and she like sits on my chest and looks me in my face, and just like, I felt like I was there for so long, just like looking at this witch in her face as she breathes and stares at me. And I've had these dreams, these nightmares, like throughout my whole entire life. And there's been times in my life that I felt like this witch was around. You know what I mean? That breathing is very specific. Like one time I was like, it was like a few years ago here in this house that I'm living in now. I opened the door and I'm to the fridge, and I'm looking in the fridge to get like some sort of snack or something. And the whole house is quiet because everybody's in bed. I'm going for like, you know, I'm going for like some lemonade or whatever. And I hear like the breathing, and it freaked me out so bad. I'm a grown ass man. Like if I hear somebody, like people that know me, if I hear something bump in the night, I'm grabbing my pistol and, you know, I'm going to go check it out, or I, you know, rack my shotgun, and I'm ready to, you know, take care of business. This freaked me out. I knew exactly what the breathing was, and I ran all the way upstairs, and I woke up my wife and told her, and like stuff like that. It's really freaky. It's a really freaky experience.
Absolutely terrifying there, especially because, as people in the chat have noticed, you get rather worked up about it even now as an adult man.
Yeah, I'm like freaked out now in my studio here.
Better turn on some of the lights, put on a candle.
Well, I got lights on here. There's like this. Yeah, yeah, that's my story. And you described this entity as the night hag or the nightmare, right?
It does sound very similar to that, yes, but I think it also could be a troll, which, as we know, trolls were very associated with sorcery, ugly, deformed beings who are akin to the Jotnar, the enemies of the gods. giants, as people would know them. But trolls were a special subtype of them. They're often deformed, and they were very associated with sorcery and sorcerous bloodlines, even. Especially because, as you mentioned, it being a witch, that would make a lot of sense there.
So, do you think this entity was some sort of troll entity, or like what do you think this thing? And I see some people in the chat are saying, let me tell you something. Somebody said in the chat that this is a pretty common nightmare, the chest-sitting hag. And I looked it up, and I saw a drawing that somebody made of their chest-sitting hag, and it was, the same entity. And I Googled it, Google image and stuff, and I saw something that somebody drew that I was like, and I got, that, feeling in your chest, I was like, oh, my God. This thing is real.
Yeah, independent confirmation there can be definitely terrifying.
Yeah.
But I think it definitely could be one of the nightmares, the Nicton Mara. Or it could be a troll, either one. If it was a troll, I would imagine it's using its sorcery to alter its appearance or something of that sort.
So what is the Nicton Mara?
The Nicton Mara are a type of malicious spirit. They, in fact, they might be related to the Dakofar in some sense, just as the Landvetir are probably related. They're like lesser Alfar, related to the Yasofar in some sense. Brownies, all those sort of good, beneficent spirits you would like to appease around nature in your home. Well, they also have the polar inverse of that, the dark side of it. And the Nightmare is probably one of these lesser Alfar, the Dakofar.
That's it's freaky stuff. And you just mentioned trolls. And before we run out of time, I want to address trolls. Because obviously trolls are a big part of Germanic lore and Germanic belief in Germanic supernatural creatures and stuff like that. I'm still freaked out thinking about that frickin' witch. She's a C word. I'm not swearing on the air anymore, but that's something that freaks me out, is the nightmare witch, this chest-sitting hag. Terrible. So anyway, okay, let's talk about trolls before I, start getting real freaked out here. So we're talking about trolls, and they're, a really important part of the lore, but they're kind of looked at differently across different cultures. Some cultures view them as literally giant monsters that live in the woods, like in Sweden. That's what they believe. And that, I've seen the movie Troll Hunter. That's what they believe, that they're these giant monsters that run around and eat people, and they're descended from the Jotun and stuff like that. And then other people, like you're describing, believe that they are a supernatural being or an otherworldly being that is, you mentioned something about being the bloodline of sorcerers. I'd actually like you to touch on that as well.
I don't believe I have the attestation at hand, but I do believe our colleague Mark from Neurona Society has also encountered this issue here, where they're creating them as the bloodline of sorcerers, and that's part of his spiel on why the Seether arts are in fact the black arts, because it comes from trolls and the Jotnar.
Wow. And as far as trolls, like for example, we were talking about my nightmare witch. How would she be, like you mentioned, like some sort of shape-shifting troll, right?
Right, because as trolls have some sort of sorcerous art, what they can do with this is any of the various things the gods could have done, or we see it in the various sagas. The Hamramr is what's called. It's being shape-strong, the ability to alter your outside form.
That's pretty terrifying. And but throughout cultures, like you were talking about them being giant physical beings, and sometimes they're entities. What was the overall view of troll? What does troll mean? Is it just literally an abomination, or?
I believe that our ancestors used the broad umbrella of troll in order to describe a bunch of different, probably unrelated beings that they probably did understand what they were, formally speaking, like if you went to a priest or something. But to the casual person, they were all just trolls. It would be like calling like a demon or a ghost or something of that sort. We see a lot of this in the opposite as the Alfar as well. There's a tendency for our ancestors to call anything that is quasi-magical or supernatural, it's just an elf.
Yeah, and actually the name, speaking of Lord of the Rings, the name Gandalf means Gond. You're talking about, it means magic elf, right?
Yeah, staff elf. Gondor is a staff, magic staff. Which actually is a very Germanic idea, the notion of the wizard with the staff that contains magical power. That is actually the picturesque Germanic idea.
Yeah, so pretty much Gandalf is Odin, pretty much.
Yeah, we even have kings of Norway who were named Gandalf. He, in fact, Gandalf Gerstad Alf. When he died, he was such a virtuous and beneficent man that he was taken amongst the Alfar and became one of them when he was buried in a mound. And the people in Norway and the area worshipped him to gain prosperity and as a protector of their area.
Yeah. That's really, really fascinating. And, Gandalf's like my favorite. Well, Gandalf and Sam are like my favorite characters in Lord of the Rings. And my buddy Sturm's mentioning in the chat that how much Tolkien was really into the lore. He was really into the Germanic lore. And, most of the languages there developed from Old Icelandic. And there's actually a lot of spiritual messages in Lord of the Rings as well.
But I like to say that Tolkien was never writing a fictional book, and he never approached it that way. It's not to say that the events are literally true, but they're true mythopoetically, and that's exactly what he was trying to do here. Mm-hmm. The book, The Lord of the Rings, was an ode to the English soul. It was trying to bridge the gap between the old paganism that he was professionally associated with and his own fundamental Catholicism as sort of a bridge to guide them and connect the two.
Very fascinating. So, on a closing note, do you think that a troll would be something like a lot of people would understand a demon to be?
Oh, definitely. Something, a lot of what people would consider to be a demon is probably what our ancestors would have called a troll.
Wow. That's pretty scary. Yeah. And do you think that these trolls can like possess people, like what their version of demonology says?
Well, of course, as we know, they have sorcerous powers, and one of the functions of Saether is the ability to apply curses to people to force them to have certain behaviors, to do what you want, to take control of their mind. And this is something our ancestors frowned upon very much. Practicing this sort of thing would have led to death, but trolls live in the Utengard, outside of the laws of man. And that is why they are so dangerous and that they're enemies of the gods.
Wow. Wow. I actually have a story that I believe is related to some sort of possession or something like that, but we are out of time. I will tell that story in another time. Folks in the chat, if you ever want me to drop it during a future show, just hit me up like, Dave, tell about the possessed guy at Walmart, and I'll tell the story about that. It's actually really spooky story, really weird. My wife was there. She saw it. It was weird. So we are going to close it down for this evening. Mr. Tristan, do you have anything to finish with?
Yeah, I would like to finish that. Maybe we can, in fact, do another episode like this. I have a couple personal ghost stories I never got to myself.
Oh, do you want to go over for a little bit and tell some more stories?
No. I think we can save it for a different episode. That'll be great.
Very, very cool. Very cool. So, yeah, excellent. Yeah, man, I have so many more stories I'd like to tell. We should have started with the stories a little bit earlier, but it's okay. Now we got enough information to do a part two of the paranormal and the Germanic lore and stuff like that. I hope everybody enjoyed the episode tonight. Many thanks to all you guys. Make sure to go check out Tristan. Is the website up and rolling yet, or is it still?
No, it's aryakasha.com. You can go there and visit it right now.
Aryakasha.com. aryakasha.com. I'm going to type it in the chat right now. Aryakasha is a wonderful organization that Mr. Tristan and our friend Kerwin, who was on last week, started together. Aryakasha is an organization that is dedicated to finding the Proto-Indo-European route between both the Indo-European traditions, both in Sanatana Dharma as well as in the Germanic tradition. And the work that they do is groundbreaking. It's absolutely tremendous. And everybody make sure also to go check out me and Tristan are also a member, colleagues in the Nirona Society, which everybody knows is the premier academic institution dedicated to Germanic spirituality, in my opinion, in the world. Some of the brightest people I've like. I feel that I'm a pretty smart guy. I'm a pretty smart guy in like an average life and stuff like that. I'm like the smart guy. In the hall with these guys that are over in Nirona Society, including Mr. Tristan, I'm like the dumb guy. These guys are so brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And go check out Nirona Society's YouTube channel as well. Mr. Mark has so many great productions on there. And I go back years and years. You see an entire timeline of his research. He spent, I don't know, 20, 30 years on this. It's incredible, incredible work at Nirona Society. Absolutely, absolutely the best. So check out Aryakasha, Nirona.org, Aryakasha.com. And we will be back next week, but before we close out, I want to give one more shout out to my homegirl, Miss Hannah, at traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Stop giving your money to the vampires. Stop giving your money to the elitist serpents that hate your guts and sell you poison. Dude, let me tell you, the shampoo, the lotion, the soap, like all that stuff that you buy that you pull off the shelf at the supermarket is full of poison, chemicals, synthetics, plastics, all kinds of stuff, trashes your hair, trashes your body, trashes your skin. It's literally poison. Stop giving money to people that hate you and that sell you poison. You're literally buying poison from your enemies. Stop doing it. Instead, give money to somebody that loves you and loves their folk and support folk economy. Support folk economy. I'm going to scream that from the rooftops until the day I die, but we need to start doing it. And also get a tremendous product. I use it. My wife uses it. Dr. G uses it. So many people. My mom uses it. I mean, I know so many people that use it. I get messages all the time. Hey, I started using Traditional Apothecary. It's really, really great. I use the beard oil every single day. Every single day. And I got one of them like really wiry Brillo beards. This makes it soft like it's never been before. I'm telling you guys. And you know, I always thought that lotion was for women and stuff like that. Let me tell you, dude, I feel like a million bucks using this stuff. Our ancestors gifted us with so many wonderful, beautiful features. So you owe it to yourself and you owe it to your ancestors to let yourself and your features and your beauty shine for all the world to see. So go to traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Type in promo code Dave to get 10% off Traditional Apothecary. You're going to love it, I promise. We're going to be back next week here, Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Dave Martell, like, subscribe, share, and click the little alert button so you can get alert every time we go live here on The Bog, which, like I said, every single Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, or whenever I do my other live streams, you know, streaming from my car, just talking about my ideas, or any of the other various uploads that come from my channel here. So we're going to close it out for this evening. Many blessings, many, many blessings to all you guys. Much love to all you guys and your wonderful, beautiful families. And I hope you guys have a very blessed Alpha Blot and Halloween, and I hope your kids have so much fun out there trick-or-treating. Stay safe. You guys know all the safety stuff. Check all the wrappers. Make sure you don't get anything that anything goofy, and have a wonderful, safe, great holiday. Hail to you guys. Hail the gods. Hail the folk. Much love. Many blessings. I'll see you guys next week. Hail.